Ever wanted to play a Sun Soul Monk in D&D? No? Come on! Well, hey, you might want to after watching this video. Welcome to D4. Hey everybody, so here at D4, each week we take a deep dive into character builds for our favorite role-playing games. I like to crunch numbers about them, theorycraft about them, not so that I can tell you the right way or the best way to play a certain character, but to explore one potential way to build something in the hopes of creating a character that's both really fun, but also really powerful to play. So if you enjoy creating characters for your favorite role-playing games almost as much as you enjoy playing the actual game itself, or if you're just looking for tips or ideas on how to build something that you're thinking about playing, or this week, if you're just hoping to see me crash and burn, then welcome home. This is where you belong. I am so glad you're here, so thanks for watching. My name's Colby. If you enjoy what I do here, I'd appreciate it if you'd consider joining the channel as a member. There's a little button down there that says join. Click on it. It'll tell you about all the little perks you can get by being a channel member, including access to the library of write-ups that I make for each of these builds, access to the D4 Discord server, which is filled with tons of lovely and wonderful people, and even access to the monthly live Q&A hangout sessions that we do. Huge thank you and shout out to all of my channel members. You guys, I couldn't do this without you. Truly, thank you. And everybody else, thank you too. Just watching, liking, subscribing, commenting, and ringing that notifications bell. These are great ways to support the channel too if you don't really want to be a member. That's okay. All right, so yeah, that's right. I'm finally going to do it. I mean, I've always said that monks were my favorite class in D&D, conceptually at least, and to date, the only subclass that I have never used in any build for monks is the Sun Soul Monk. Why did I put it off for so long? Well, it's quite simply because, in my opinion anyways, it is mechanically the worst subclass for the mechanically weakest class, as much as I love them, in all of D&D 5e. Yeah, I said it. I would love to hear you tell me why I'm wrong in the comments. I did a poll recently, and most of you seem to think that the four elements takes the cake for worst monk subclass. But, I mean, I know Chris, Triant Monk, has my back when it comes to the Sun Soul. He even posted a video ranking monk subclasses, which you can watch right up there. And yeah, Sun Soul comes in last. We can argue about which is worse, but you know, the real question is, why are they so bad? Why do I think they're so bad? Well, first of all, because they're monks. I appreciate that a lot of you may disagree with the sentiment that monks are the worst subclass in the game, but, well, again, most of my viewers, at least, seem to agree with that fact, based on the poll that I did a week ago at the time of this recording. But, I mean, maybe you're all biased because you've watched me whine about monks for so long, but I still think that you will find similar results, right? If you look around in the D&D optimizer community at large, most people seem to agree. Monks are pretty bad. I'm not going to go into why monks tend to be a little lackluster mechanically in this video, as that would probably be fairly redundant, but hey, good news. It looks like Wizards of the Coast are fixing them in the version of the Player's Handbook that will be out later this year. Anyways, check out why we think so by watching this video here if you haven't seen it. So yeah, if you're watching this video after the new Player's Handbook comes out later this year, congratulations. You are likely, anyways, in a much better place than those of us wallowing in the world of the 2014 monk. But aside from the fact that they are hampered by being monks, Sun Souls are just, they're in a rough place. Conceptually, I love the idea. A monk who is so in tune with their ki and the energy of the universe that they can channel it into ranged radiant attacks? Sounds awesome. But in practice, the designers just really fell flat on the mechanics, I think. The main feature, really, Radiant Sunbolt, is okay, but it gives no more damage than just making unarmed strikes. And from there, the features they get just kinda get worse and worse with each new feature. At level 6, you get to spend a bunch of ki to cast a first level, situationally useful at best spell, Burning Hands, which you can upcast for slightly more damage by spending even more ki. At 11th level, you get to use your action to do what they call a devastating and deadly explosion.
But which is actually just 2d6 damage.
Seriously. I mean, sure, you could spend 3 key points to make that fireball level damage, but remember, this is at 11th level now, and it's further hampered by the fact that enemies make a constitution saving throw against the damage, way worse than Fireball's dexterity saving throw, and if the enemy succeeds on their save, which they probably will because it's constitution, they don't even take half damage. Yikes. And then, at level 17, the Sun Soul Monks get their capstone ability, which makes them glow with light. Cool. And then if they get hit by a melee attack, they can use their reaction to do like 10 damage at level 17. So yeah, that's what we're working with. But you know what? I'm not going to let the daunting mechanical disadvantages deter me any longer. Too many of you have been asking me to take a stab at the subclass over the years, and I love monks too much to not give it my best shot. I made what I think is a pretty decent way of the four elements monk a while back. Check it out there. And yeah, I mean, a lot of people, if you saw the poll, argue that four elements are actually worse than Sun Souls. So yeah, let's give it our best shot. We're gonna build this character for sustained damage, and I'm gonna give myself this one rule. I can never have more levels in any other class than I do in monk. Okay? Oh, and quick note, if you really want to go even more Sun Soul than we are going to end up going, in order to try and really lean into that bursty area of effect damage, stay tuned for the final thoughts, and I will quickly go over an alternative build to this one that goes for like area of effect burst damage, all right? Okay, let's take a stab at D&D episode number 164, The Sun Soul Monk. Huge thanks to my good friend Randall Hampton for the fantastic artwork that he did for this character build. I love it. It really captures the vibe, as you will see in a moment. You might be a little confused by the artwork. If you are interested in following Randall to check out the other stuff that he does, or maybe reaching out to commission him to create art for your character or your entire party even, I'll put links in the video description, as always, on how to do so. But first, whoa, what happened? I want to tell you guys about Holzkern, the sponsor for the video this week. These guys are a company out of Austria, and they make jewelry and other fashion pieces for both men and women. I just discovered this company, and I'm actually kind of in love with them. All of their products are made at least partially from natural materials, wood, stone, etc. I kind of have a little bit of like a woodsy, earthy aesthetic, and so I really love that about their products. And it makes each one of them look and feel kind of unique due to like the grains and stuff like that. Right? Now, Mother's Day is coming up, and so this was a perfect opportunity to get my wife a couple of cool, like, jewelry products. Check out these, like, wooden boxes that they send them in. So neat. I got her this really cool kind of starburst, like, pendant that I know she's gonna love, and a cool little ring. It's kind of got some like mother of pearl going on. Now, me personally, I don't love wearing jewelry, but I am a sucker for a nice pair of sunglasses. I got a couple from them. These are my favorites. They've got like a blue stained kind of maple on them. So cool. And then I ordered another pair. They've got, I believe it's like a little bit of walnut on the frame. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And yeah, they come in a ton of different like styles, varieties. The watches are particularly nice looking. If you're a watch guy or gal, definitely check those out. I mean, they have over 1,000 designs between the jewelry, the watches, the sunglasses, etc. Tons of really great stuff to choose from. Now, even though they're based in Austria, shipping on all of their products is free. And they do express shipping, which means that it's gonna arrive in 2 to 5 business days, no matter where you live. And even if there are custom fees because you're out of country, they pay for them. And if you're interested in getting your mom or your partner something nice for Mother's Day, if you order by May 6th, all orders are guaranteed to arrive by Mother's Day. So go check them out. I'm confident that you will find something that you like for you and for someone else in your life. When you go, use this website, if you would, holzkern.com/d4. I'll put that in the video description as well as a pinned comment in the comment section. And at checkout, if you use the code D4, you're going to save 15% off of your order, which is very generous. So huge thanks to Holzkern. I'm a big fan, and I know my wife is going to love these pieces that I got her. All right, let's get back to the build. All right, at level 1 for our starting class, yeah, if you can believe it, we're going to start Monk so that we can beeline to the Sun Soul's best feature, among other things. For our starting race, though, we're actually going to be taking 2 races for this character. Yeah, that's right. Or, I suppose, more accurately, 1 race and 1 lineage, as long as our DM is okay with it. First of all, I'm going to want to start this character off as a fairy. This is for two main reasons, one mechanical and one conceptual. As for mechanics, yes, among other things, fairies can fly. They get a fly speed equal to their move speed, and that's, I mean, really strong, obviously. Free flight, the equivalent of a third level spell that requires concentration, or, you know, a few very specific magic items anyways, is so good that a lot of DMs don't allow flying races at their table. For this reason, I very rarely use them in my builds, the only exceptions being the fun but gimmicky dive bomber build there and the whippoorwill build. I might be out of cards if I'm not there. If I am, that's the thumbnail. But here's the thing. We're playing a Sunsoul monk. I can see DMs holding the line. If you were trying to get away with like a Gloomstalker Ranger Assassin fairy, or a ranged fighter with hand crossbows and sharpshooter fairy, or even an Eldritch Blast focused warlock fairy. But come on, we are seriously handicapping ourselves here. Throw us a bone. Anyways, I've never used a fairy for a build before, so that makes me kind of excited to try him out. As for the conceptual reason I wanted to go fairy, we will get into that as we go. Now, what was that about lineage? Right, here's something else I don't use very often. In fact, I think the only time I've done so was with the ultimate vampire dampier tank build. And I know I'm out of cards now, so that's what the thumbnail looks like. As a refresher, here's how the lineages that came to us from Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft work. You either pick the lineage, Dampier, Hexblood, or Reborn, as basically your starting race, or you start with a different race, but then turn into one of these lineages later on because of something that happened to your character. You become infected or cursed, etc. If you go that route and replace your starting race with a lineage, we are very specifically told that we get to keep any skill proficiencies from that original race, plus any climbing, swimming, or you guessed it, flying speed we gained from our original race. So yes, again, this is something that will require a little DM buy-in, I think, at a lot of tables anyways. You don't necessarily need to work in the change to your character in game, though I think it'd be cool if you did, but yeah, you could always come to the party at level one having first been a fairy in your life and then changed at some point in your backstory to this lineage, right? But yeah, of course, talk this over with your DM beforehand and make sure that they're on board. If they're not, and or if they're not okay with you playing a character who can fly, then I would probably just start with the lineage here, which for this character is going to be the Hexblood, another first. That's three firsts for this video. Cool. Okay, so Hexbloods are basically hags, and they get some fun, like gross stuff that they can do with their fingernails or rotten teeth. But the main reason we wanted to go Hexblood was because they get the Hex Magic feature, which tells us that we learn the Disguise Self spell, situationally useful, and the Hex spell, which we want for damage purposes. Now, we can only use these spells once per long rest for now, but we can use spell slots to cast them again later if we multi-class into a spellcasting class. Wink. I don't think you're supposed to say wink when you wink. Hex, of course, lets us use our bonus action to basically curse a target so that thereafter, any attack we make against them, and it doesn't have to be a weapon attack, that's important. It does an extra d6 of damage to the target, right? Cool. So yes, here we are, a small flying fairy who has been turned into a hag. It's like Tinkerbell's evil twin or something. But we're also a monk who shoots radiant beams out of our hands? What is this character's story? I'm thinking that as a fey creature, they weren't really into the whole my body is a weapon thing that most monks bring to the table, but instead channeled the magic of the Feywild through their body into these beams of light, like supercharged pixie dust. But perhaps their own fey trickery backfired on them at some point. They tried to prank a hag, and the hag got revenge. Or maybe they had a friend who was captured by a witch, and in order to free them, they offered themselves up to be cursed in their loved one's place, and now they've been sent on a quest to find a way to free themselves from the witch's curse. It feels like really fertile ground for a great character concept to me, and it's gonna get even better. Anyways, as for starting abilities, I'm gonna say let's go with a 15 dexterity and take a plus one from racial there, 15 wisdom plus one, 15 constitution plus one, so that we've got a 16 in our three most important abilities, which is nice. As for equipment, I mean, good news, we're a monk, we don't really need much, so go the gold buy route and then just save your money. Get the basic necessities, right? As a monk one, though, we get a couple features. Unarmored defense tells us that so long as we are unarmored and unshielded, shielded, and I'm not planning on using armor or shield for this build, especially since fairies can't fly if they're wearing medium or heavy armor. Anyways, in that case, our armor class equals our dexterity modifier plus our wisdom modifier plus 10, which is nice. It'll get us a 16 for now. It's decent. And then we get the martial arts feature, which tells us also that if we're unarmored and unshielded, we can do a number of things. Use dexterity instead of strength, and use a d4 for damage for our unarmed strikes, and that d4 scales up with more monk levels. And also, when we take the attack action, we can make an unarmed strike with our bonus action. We're not really planning on doing any of those things unless we have to, but having the option to do them will be nice when we're in melee, right? And maybe let me say this here. If you can't or don't want to go with a flying race, I'd strongly consider wearing armor and a shield on this character. The nice thing about Sun Souls, maybe the only nice thing, honestly, is that they can basically do unarmed strike damage from range without needing to make unarmed strikes, right? Thus, when making those ranged attacks, they don't really need to worry about these martial arts abilities, but can still largely do the same damage, letting you have your armor and shield cake and eat it too, damage-wise, right? In that case, then, maybe instead of going hag, I might go custom lineage for a free feat, taking a half feat so that you can start with an 18 dexterity, and then I think an early cleric or hexblade dip for medium armor and shield proficiency. I think I prefer the hexblade route, since that would give us hexblade's curse and the hex spell, meaning we wouldn't need to worry about being a hexblood if we didn't want to or couldn't, with a spell slot that resets on a short rest, right? And monks, of course, love things that reset on short rests. Going hexblade, of course, would mean that you'd need to lower your other ability scores to get that required 13 charisma. I'd probably sacrifice wisdom in that case to get there, since we're not going to need it much on this build, especially if you're not using unarmored defense. Anyways, going this route would get us a better armor class with medium armor and a shield, right? Some warlock perks, and still let us do basically the same damage as an unarmed striking flurry of blows using monk, but from range, once we get to monk 3 anyways. And I mean, that's not nothing. But assuming that we're sticking with the fairy hag route, at level 2 we get key, which tells us that we now have one key point per monk level. These reset on a short rest and empower monk abilities and features. At this level we can do 3 things with our key: spend a key point to take the dodge action as a bonus action, spend a key point to dash or disengage as a bonus action, or spend a key point to flurry of blows, letting us make 2 unarmed strikes as a bonus action instead of 1. Most monks, in my experience, spend most of their key points on flurry of blows. You know, maybe stunning strike later. We'll probably rarely be doing so ourselves, but don't count it out completely. We also get unarmored movement at level 2, which tells us that, one more time, if we're unarmored and unshielded, we get an extra 10 feet of move speed, and yes, this should affect both our walking and flying speed as a fairy, which is great. We'd have 40 feet of flying speed right now. Fantastic. At level 3, we get Deflect Missiles. This lets us use our reaction to reduce damage when we're hit by a ranged weapon attack, even letting us throw the missile back if we reduce the damage to 0, and we want to spend a key point to do that. Sometimes it's a good idea. And then we get our monk subclass, our monastic tradition, and of course, we are going to take Sun Soul. And hey, since I've never used them before, let's read what Wizards of the Coast has to say about this most illustrious of subclasses. Monks of the Way of the Sun Soul learn to channel their life energy into searing bolts of light. They teach that meditation can unlock the ability to unleash the indomitable light shed by the soul of every living creature. Okay, so they didn't have a lot to say, I guess. It's almost like the flavor writers were just dialing this one in, like the subclass designers maybe were. Okay, no more slamming WotC for the subclass. Maybe. I'll try my best. As a Radiant Sun Soul monk, we get one feature and one feature only here, but yeah, it is their best feature, I think. Radiant Sunbolt. This essentially just lets us make ranged attacks equal to our martial arts die. Now, a few things to note. The attacks are considered ranged spell attacks, but they use our dexterity for the plus to hit and damage. Is this the only thing in game that lets us use our dexterity to make a spell attack? Surely not, but I can't think of any others. Let me know if you can. That's kinda cool, but honestly, we'd be a lot better off if this were considered a weapon attack, right? Because that would let us benefit from, say, the archery fighting style and or the sharpshooter feat, for example. Probably wouldn't make a lot of sense to call it a weapon attack since it's shooting beams of light that do radiant damage, right? But anyways, when we do this, we take the attack action, and later, when we get extra attack, we can replace one or both of our attacks with this radiant bolt. We're also told that if we make at least one attack with our Sunbolt, then we can spend a key point to make two more Radiant Bolt attacks with our bonus action. Thus, it's numerically identical to making an unarmed strike with our action and then using our bonus action to Flurry of Blows, right? The only real differences being that they're spell attacks, not weapon attacks, do radiant damage instead of bludgeoning damage, and are made from up to 30 feet away. And you know what? I mean, again, that's not nothing. First up, radiant damage is very rarely resisted in 5e, so that's nice. Probably better yet, yeah, I mean, making attacks from range is tactically advantageous in most situations. It allows us to reach targets that we sometimes wouldn't have otherwise been able to reach, and it tends to let us stay a little safer, generally speaking, since most enemies in 5e are melee combatants. This is the main reason I wanted to go with a flying race for this build. Being able to hover above the battlefield, staying relatively safe from most enemies, and I mean, especially since we've got deflect missiles, right? While being able to pepper our enemies with rays of light from up above is going to make the fact that your damage is fairly lackluster a lot less bad. We're kind of trading offensive power for defensive safety, and, you know, it's not a bad trade. If you can't play a race with innate flight at your table, even as a Sun Soul monk, that's fine. Thanks especially to our increased move speed, unless you decided to don armor, I guess, it should be easier for us to kite and hit and run and still stay largely out of harm's way. And while those things aren't going to show up on my damage report spreadsheets, it's not something that we should ignore or discount. What this character lacks in offensive prowess, they're partly going to make up for with their ability to stay safe and also support, as we'll get into later, making them like more of a backline skirmisher and like backup support character than a true frontline striker or damage dealer, right? And those kinds of characters are valuable and powerful. Does it feel like I'm trying to convince myself? Maybe I am, but you know what? I think it's working. But before I get too excited, I should probably mention that, sure, you could actually do just slightly more damage with this character by making a long sword or other versatile D8 weapon into a monk weapon, which yes, we can do if we have weapon proficiency thanks to the dedicated weapon feature we picked up at level 2 that I didn't talk about, and then just like make weapon attacks and flurry of blows attacks, right? And that's sort of the great tragedy of the Sun Soul Monk, I guess, that to use its most defining subclass feature, we actually kind of have to do less damage than we otherwise could. You'd do more damage by just ignoring your subclass features. Of course, we do get the benefits of ranged and radiant damage that we've talked about, but yeah, I guess it's further worsened by the fact that while there are magic weapons to increase our hit chance and damage, among other things, and even magic items like the Insignia of Claws and the Eldritch Claw Tattoo to improve our unarmed strikes, there's not a lot of things that could increase the hit chance and damage of our radiant bolts. I don't typically account for magic items in my damage reports unless I'm using an artificer, so that kind of thing isn't really going to show up in the spreadsheets here, but in an actual game, it's probably going to be a pretty big difference maker. Alright, moving on. Level 4. We get an ability score increase for feet, and yeah, if we're trying to get the most damage possible here, of course we're going to want to bump dexterity, taking it to 18, which has the added benefit of improving so many other things too, right? Our saves, our initiative, our armor class, etc. We also get slow fall here, which is typically a favorite flavor feature of mine for monks. It lets us use our reaction when we fall to reduce damage by 5 times our monk level. Really cool when you're not a flying creature who doesn't need to worry about falling. But level 5 is, of course, a big bump for us, as it is for so many classes in 5e, since first and foremost we get extra attack, meaning we could now, if we had the key anyways, make 4 Radiant Bolt attacks on our turn. 2 with our action, 2 with our bonus action, and that's not too shabby. It's further improved by the fact that our martial arts die goes up to a d6 now. It's not a huge improvement, but it's something. And then, yes, we also get Stunning Strike here, of course. And while it's potentially a good feature when it works, anyways, which is rare enough, admittedly, thank goodness for the changes it's getting in the new player's handbook later this year that causes it to at least do damage when it fails. I know it kind of got nerfed at the same time, but overall, I like the change. Anyways, it's not something that we'll likely use much on this build, since it requires us to hit with a melee weapon attack if we want to spend the key point to try and stun the enemy until the end of our next turn. We'll hopefully rarely be in melee, but of course, sometimes, despite our best efforts, enemies will get all up in our business, especially if we're not playing a flying race, right? And so, yeah, being able to do just as much damage in melee as we do from range, with the added benefit here of being able to potentially stun them, so we can more easily get away without taking an opportunity attack, among other things, is pretty cool. And if we are flying, how cool will it be to go up against another flying opponent? DM thinks they're being all tactical and countering you. You really need to counter a Sun Tzu monk? Anyways, but then when that flying enemy gets up in your business, you stun them and watch them have zero move speed and thus plummet to the ground, taking falling damage and landing prone. So cool. It's assuming they don't have the hover ability, of course, which lots of flying enemies in D&D 5e do not have. Stunning Strike will be a nice tool to have in our tool belt, even if we don't get it out as often as other monks. But at level 6, with our most important monk features and buffs secured, I think it's time to finally start doing some multiclassing. There are a lot of potential ways to go here, I think. I've talked about Warlock, which again, I think is even better if we're taking a different race and or lineage. But I think Cleric has some nice synergy as well. Ranger could be good, but I think my favorite pick to pair with the Sun Soul, at least one focused on single target sustained damage, has got to be Druid. So what's the story with the character that would cause them to take Druid levels at this point? I mean, for a creature from the Feywild who's in tune with the energy of the universe, it doesn't feel like a huge stretch to me to just take Druid levels. No explanation needed. But if you feel like you need one, maybe our character has encountered someone or something in their quest to cure themselves of their haggishness that requires them, though, to become more closely attuned to the natural world and or the primal forces that inherit it. Maybe they've completed a part of their quest towards healing and were blessed as a result by a nature spirit with a greater portion of healing energy. Perhaps this healing energy is just a natural result of us progressing along our path to healing. It might even have an impact on your physical appearance, reducing the warts on your face or the moss-like quality of your hair. I don't know. But whatever your reasons, yes, we are taking Druid levels now. This means at Druid 1, we learn Druidic, which is the special coded language that Druids use to leave messages for one another in the forest. And then we get Druid spells, and I think I just take kind of the usuals here, Guidance for a nice D4 increase to ability checks, Healing Word for a bonus action ranged heal, Good Berry for both food utility and a super efficient heal between combat encounters anyways. The only things I'd say we should probably consider using in combat once in a while would be Fairy Fire and Entangle. Both require our concentration, so it would mean no hex, but both can potentially give us advantage on our attacks. Fairy Fire just automatically if the enemy fails their dexterity saving throw against it, and Entangle by potentially restraining enemies who fail their strength save against it. I mean, arguably you should regularly use either of these over hex, since they can do more than just increase your damage, right? But since we're building these characters in a vacuum, hex is going to do more damage for us up until enemy armor class of 18 at this level anyways, if the enemy fails their save against Fairy Fire or Entangle and thus we have advantage, right? Because yeah, at an enemy AC at 18 and above, having advantage is better for our damage on average than the extra D6 we'd get from hex. So sure, when I crunch numbers here in a sec, I'm just going to assume that we're using one of those spells to get advantage instead of hex once we hit AC 18, and yeah, in the interest of exploring best case scenario, I'm just going to assume that the enemy has failed their save against it, knowing full well that won't always be the case. Regardless, I should mention that it is nice to have a couple of spell slots, finally, that we can spend on Hex if we need or want, making the damage that we get from it feel a lot more sustainable. And so, yes, speaking of sustainable damage, at level 6, it's time for our first damage report. Oh. In case you hadn't noticed, the editing this week is way worse because my good friend and editor, Dallin, smashed his fingers in an accident and he is unavailable this week. So it's just, it's old school me just plunking along in the editing room here. So anyways, just wanted to kind of give you an FYI in case the editing style had been bothering you. Hopefully we'll be back to Dallin's superior tactics and technique next week. Combat for us is going to be pretty straightforward. We cast Hex with our bonus action and start throwing beams of light. 2 with our action and 2 with our bonus action and a key point. When our target dies, we transfer Hex with our bonus action and keep going. Now, yes, being bonus action intensive, using Hex isn't always super efficient. If the target is likely to die before you get a chance to attack them twice, right, we're better off just not using it. That said, we don't have unlimited ki. 5 points is enough to see us through a single combat encounter most of the time, especially if we're using at least one round and bonus action to get hex going, right? So I'm gonna consider this damage sustainable, but yeah, the tactic works best against like a big bad that you're just gonna be attacking round after round. When that is happening, we'd be doing a d6 for each sunbolt, plus 1d6 more for hex, plus 4 for dexterity, for a total of 8d6 plus 16. And yes, as I mentioned before, I'm going to assume that from an enemy AC of 18 and higher, you've got advantage from Fairy Fire or Entangle instead of the extra d6 of damage from Hex. But take that with a grain of salt. Cut me some slack here. I'm trying to make the numbers look as good as possible, okay? So, at this level, against an enemy with a 10 armor class, then we would on average do 41 damage per round. And against an enemy with a 15 AC, it would be 30 DPR. And that's not terrible. Compared to other sustained damage builds that I've done to date, at this level, that's kind of bottom half of tier 2, upper half of tier 3, better than average. And all of those builds were made for sustained damage, right? It kind of goes to illustrate that the first 5 levels or so of Monk actually tend to be pretty okay compared to other classes. It's the poor scaling after that that really hurts them more than anything, I think. Which is the main reason we've started multi-class, right? And hey, we've got some fun utility, lots of mobility, some nice support options. All in all, it feels like a pretty solid build so far. Let's see if we can keep that up. We will attempt to do so by sticking with Druid for a bit, primarily for more and better spells. But at Druid 2, we get Wild Shape, first of all, which lets us transform into a beast of 1/4 challenge rating or lower, twice per short rest, so long as the beast doesn't have a swim speed or fly speed for now. No big deal, of course, for those of us who can already fly anyways, and we'll mostly be using this ability for, like, infiltration purposes. A great and fun and useful tool to have in our belt. We also get Wild Companion, which lets us burn a use of our wild shape to summon a familiar, like with the Find Familiar spell. The big difference being that this familiar only lasts a number of hours equal to half our druid level. I'll assume that we've got a familiar out for combat and that it's giving us advantage on our first attack every round anyways. It's not going to have a huge impact on the numbers, but I'll take every bump I can get. We also get our druid subclass here, our druidic circle, and honestly, you can sort of pick your favorite here. I would love to get more damage from Spores Druid, but alas, the extra damage we would get there only works on melee weapon attacks, so I think I'll take Shepherd for my circle here. It gives us a little utility and support benefits now, and something cool that I'd like to have later, as we'll discuss when we get to it. But yeah, other subclasses could work great here. Moon Druid might be kind of fun. It would give you some additional tankiness, and I don't know why you couldn't shoot those radiant beams out of, like, a bear paw or something. Of course, you'd want to pick an animal that had a high dex. But anyways, something to consider. But assuming that we go Shepherd, for now, we get two features. Speech of the Woods, which lets us speak Sylvan and kind of more easily communicate with beasts in a rudimentary fashion. And then, more importantly, Spirit Totem, which lets us, once per short rest and as a bonus action, summon an incorporeal spirit within 60 feet of us that grants a 30-foot radius aura that does some nice things depending on which spirit we summon. The Bear Spirit grants us and our allies temporary hit points equal to 5 plus our druid level, as well as advantage on strength checks and saves. Not bad. Unicorn Spirit primarily gives a nice little heal to everyone in the aura when you cast a spell to heal. It's not bad. And then the Hawk Spirit, which lets us use our reaction to grant advantage to one attack against an enemy that's inside the aura. So now, between our familiar and our hawk totem, we could potentially have advantage on 2 of our 4 attacks, regardless of whether we've got Fairy Fire or Entangle on the enemy, right? But, I mean, it takes a bonus action to summon the spirit, plus our reaction to get that advantage. And if we're already using a bonus action to cast or transfer Hex, yeah, that feels like a steep cost to get advantage on one attack per turn. I'm sure there will be times when it makes sense to use, but I don't think I can, in good conscience, just assume that we've got advantage on 2 attacks every turn now. We're bonus action heavy as it is. At level 8, we would be a Druid 3, and that means we get second level Druid spells, and there are a ton of great options here that you are going to have to choose from. Pass Without Trace, Spike Growth, Lesser Restoration, Hold Person. If you're up against humanoids, definitely consider using your concentration on that. Let me focus a bit on 2, though. First up, Moonbeam. this can be a great spell in that it has that famous wording that allows the spell to do damage both when a target is moved into the area on a turn and at the beginning of their turn. My original plan here for this build actually was to do something very different, where I was taking a Dao Genie Dip and the Crusher Feet so I could move enemies into Moonbeam with our Radiant Sunbolts, but yeah. On builds where it's hard to know where the enemy is going to move on their turn, I'm just becoming like less and less a fan of this tactic. If we've got them grappled, sure. If we can push them around a lot, like lots of forced movement, sure. But the spell is a fairly small area of effect, and even though we can move it on our turn, doing so costs an action, and like the Crusher Feet only allows for 5 feet of forced movement, so it just didn't really feel right on this build. What about Summon Beast? Another great spell, potentially, that requires concentration and summons a beast to fight for you, right? At this spell level, giving up our concentration on Hex to get this beast looks worse on paper. But again, that's assuming that we're just blasting away at the same target round after round, benefiting from that Hex, right? And not needing to constantly spend a bonus action to transfer it. Once you get this build out of the lab and onto the battlefield, I think Summon Beast is probably gonna be the way to go damage-wise. They have pack tactics. No, not that pack tactics. I'm talking about the one that gives you advantage if you're attacking an enemy standing next to an ally, and it can also be a nice little distraction for enemies who might decide to target it instead of us or our friends, which, while it would be a little sad if they died, is actually great for our party, right? Anyways, for the damage report, I'll still assume that we're using Hex, but if I were playing this character in game, I'd probably more often be concentrating on Summon Beast, I think, unless I was up against a single big bad in a fight. And, you know, that Summon Beast could actually also benefit a little bit from our totems, right? At level 9, we'd be a Druid 4, and that means another ability score increase or feat, and I'm gonna assume that we're bumping Dexterity so that we can cap it at 20, thus benefiting our damage as much as possible with this feat here. Okay. Time for our level 9 damage report. Since last check, the increases to our damage have come in the form of our dexterity bump, and yeah, that's pretty much it. Uh-oh. I mean, I guess we do now have advantage on one attack per turn as well, thanks to our familiar. But I mean, hey, it wouldn't have been any better if we had just stayed monk, so don't get mad at me for multiclassing here. It will be worth it, I think, in the long run. For now, though, these last few levels have mostly been about increasing our utility and support capabilities, something you're gonna hear a lot of in the next little bit. And that's not nothing. It just doesn't look very good on the spreadsheet, that's all. So yeah, against an enemy with a 10 armor class, now we would be doing 48 damage per round, and against a 16 AC, it would be 38 DPR. So yeah, a little bit better, but not much. We're now like bottom half of tier 4, top half of tier 5 compared to other builds that I've done to date at this level. Kind of a bummer, but again, we've picked up some really nice non-damage abilities that the rest of our party is really going to love us for. Okay, at level 10, we would be a Druid 5, and this means third level Druid spells. And once again, there are a ton of fantastic options. Aura of Vitality brings some really amazing healing, especially useful, I think, between combat encounters. Revivify, of course, should always be present in any party in case someone dies. Dispel Magic is great. Conjure Animals, if we're talking the new version that comes out officially later this year and it's survived the testing process as a strong option still. No, I'm not going to allow for the current 2014 version of that spell. It's an abomination. The one I think we might want to consider using, definitely for flavor, if not for like a ton more damage, is Summon Fae. My favorite of the summoning spells that we got from Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, and especially for this build. It lets us summon a little fairy companion, so now we get to be a small fairy with a small fairy friend. And you get to be twinsies. And it's just basically the best thing that could ever happen in D&D. Ooh, maybe you could flavor this like it's a pre-hag version of yourself that you're conjuring from the multiverse or something. Some kind of echo from the past? Or maybe like a long-lost family member who's come to join you in your fight? I don't know. But regardless, it's adorable, and I love it. The Summon Fae is great. It lasts an hour, helping us preserve spell slots, potentially getting, you know, a couple combat encounters out of them. They get to make an attack each round without costing us any actions or bonus actions or anything, just like Summon Beast. And the attack that they make is decently powerful. It's 2d6 plus 6 as a third level spell. Best of all, we get to determine their mood when we summon them. Trixie gets to create some magical darkness. Mirthful can try to charm an enemy, or Fuming, my favorite, which lets them just have advantage on their attack if they face step first, a little 30-foot teleport that they get to do each round. Now, is Summon Fae better than Hex for our concentration? I mean, yes, but barely. We're talking a point or two of damage at most ACs, and at the lowest enemy ACs, it's actually slightly worse. That will change later, but for now, yeah, I'm gonna assume that we're using it more because I just love the idea of twin fairies going into combat together than because the fantastic damage increase we got from it. But again, do keep in mind, you know, we're preserving our bonus action by not having to transfer Hex, so both on paper and more importantly in combat, I think it's going to be the better spell. Okay, at level 11, I have to go back to Monk. It's the rules. Honestly, if I were playing this character in game, I would stay with Druid. We get a lot more damage-wise and frankly support-wise too from Druid, but I can't really call this build a Sun Soul Monk if I just bounce after level 5 and never look back, can I? We're conducting a thought experiment here, so let's see it through. As a Monk 6 then, we get Ki Empowered Strikes, which tells us that our unarmed strikes are considered magical for the purpose of overcoming resistance to non-magical attacks, right? And this would be great if we were reliably making unarmed strikes, but we're probably not, at least I hope we're not. When we have to, this will be nice. Unarmored movement does get a bump here by 5 feet, so now it's plus 15 feet. That's great, 45 feet of fly speed, nothing to sneeze at. But then we get the Sun Soul's level 6 feature here as well, Searing Arc Strike. I mentioned it briefly in the preamble, but this basically lets us use our bonus action and 2 key points to cast Burning Hands as a first level spell. Now, okay, Burning Hands isn't amazing, but casting it as a bonus action isn't nothing. We could upcast it even by spending more key points, though the number of key points is capped at half our Monk level, so we can only spend up to 3 now casting it as a second level spell, meaning it would do 4d6 fire damage in a 15-foot cone against enemies who failed their dex save against it, half if they make it. So sure, nothing amazing, but you know, there will be times when the enemies are positioned just right, and maybe one or two of them are low health already, so it would make sense to finish off one or two, and then maybe also chip away at the health of one or two more. Or, sure, maybe you're fighting a bunch of low hit point minion-like creatures, right? And hey, if you're flying, keep in mind that if you get 15 feet in the air directly over the enemies, you know, think of it in 3D here. A 15-foot cone at 15 feet away cast down onto the ground would make like a 3x3 area on the grid, potentially letting you impact, you know, more enemies. Getting 2 or 3 in there shouldn't be all that difficult most fights, I would think. By itself, this is not really a feature to build around, but at least it only takes a bonus action and would still let us then throw out some radiant bolts on our turn as well. At level 12 though, back to Druid, we'd be a Druid 6, and that means we get Mighty Summoner as a Shepherd Druid, which is really the main reason I wanted to go Shepherd Druid. This tells us that for beasts or fae that we summon with a spell, they get 2 more hit points per hit die that they have. One tiny little problem. The summoned fae, and all the summon spells we get from Tasha's for that matter, don't have a listed hit die. That said, the latest like Summon X spell that Wizards of the Coast put out, Summon Draconic Spirit from Fizban's Treasury of Dragons, seems to correct this, telling us that the summoned spirit has a number of hit dice equal to the level of the spell. This seems pretty intuitive to me, and I have a hard time believing that there would be many DMs out there who wouldn't allow that to be like backwards compatible, right? But again, talk with your DM beforehand, and if they say no, your summoned fae does not have hit dice, then I would seriously consider taking a different druid subclass. But if they say yes, as I assume most would, hey, that's a pretty nice buff to our summoned fae. Also, we're told with this ability that any natural weapons that our summoned creature has are considered magical for overcoming resistance, but you know, our fae companion is attacking with a sword. And I don't know why we couldn't equip them with a magic sword if we had one available. Again, discuss with your DM. At level 13, as much as I would like to get 4th level spells in time for the level 13 damage report, no, I cannot. So, we'd be a Monk 7. And that means we get Stillness of Mind, the arguably kind of weak ability that lets us end a frightened or charmed effect on ourselves with our action. The problem being that oftentimes if we're frightened or charmed, we don't get to decide what to do with our action, but hey, we also get evasion here, which always feels pretty cool since it lets us take zero damage on a successful dexterity saving throw that we make to avoid damage, and only half if we fail, and we should rarely fail. So that's fun. But yeah, dang it. We are at our level 13 damage report, and since last check, really all of our increases have come in the form of utility, defense, and support. And not to be a broken record, but hey, let's not discount those things, please. They are important. Every party needs some utility and some support. So maybe we just need to think of this character as like a support character first, who can also throw out some damage, and we won't feel so bad about him, right? Does it feel like I'm trying to convince myself? Maybe I am, but you know what? I think it's working. So yeah, at this level, against enemies with a 10 armor class, we would on average do 47 damage per round, and against a 17 AC, it would be 38 DPR. So yeah, not surprisingly, basically the same place as last time, meaning that compared to other sustained damage builds, we're now like middle of the pack tier 5. So very near the bottom of all sustained damage builds, which honestly, I mean, it kind of surprises me that we're just not straight last, considering that we haven't seen much increase to our damage since the very first damage report, right? But we're a pretty solid support character by now, and we are finally about to see a little damage bump too, so get ready. Because at level 14, we get to be a Druid 7, meaning 4th level spells, and while, sure, Polymorph, Wall of Fire, and others are great options, with a 4th level spell slot, we would get to upcast our little Fae companion, and when we cast Summon Fae at 4th level, they get to make 2 attacks per turn. Woohoo! Because the number of attacks that they make is equal to half the level that the spell is cast at, rounded down. Whew, some actual damage increase. Nice. At level 15, we would go back to Monk, we'd be a Monk 8, that means we get another ability score increase or feat, and I'm gonna pretend that we can just ignore our concentration saving throws and bump Wisdom to increase not only our armor class, but also the DC of our Stunning Strike, and most importantly for the spreadsheet anyways, our Fae's hit chance. But yeah, of course, you probably should take Resilient Constitution, or, I mean, just start as a fighter 1, right? Or maybe just play a fighter instead of a Sun Soul Monk. At level 16, we would be a Druid 8, and that means we get another ability score increase or feat, so we can cap our Wisdom at 20 here. I mean, hey, we're flying. Nobody's doing damage to us. We have deflect missiles, so we don't need to worry about our concentration checks, right? I'm just gonna continue to pretend that that's true. But then finally, for us, at level 17, we would be a Monk 9, and we get unarmored movement improvement so that we can run up walls and across liquids on our turn if, for some reason, our wings get torn off, I guess. Hey, we also got another key point. Okay. At level 17, it is time for our final damage report, and since last check, we've managed to get a little damage bump thanks to our Fae companion making 2 attacks per turn, with a better hit chance as well, meaning they're almost doing as much damage as we are, actually. Maybe more, if we can get them a nice magical weapon. But as always, we've also picked up some nice utility and support options along the way. And thus, against enemies with a 10 armor class here, we would on average do 62 damage per round, and against an 18 AC, it would be 50 DPR. Which puts us, compared to other sustained damage builds that I've done to date, kind of middle of tier 5 again, not surprisingly. So, okay. Let's break this down here in some final thoughts. The tier score for this build, if you take the damage that they do at each enemy armor class at each of the 4 damage reports and just average them all into one big number, we end up with a 36, which yes, puts them like middle of tier 5, surprising no one. Let's discuss. First off, this build just oozes fun flavor. High on concept, not so high on mechanical power, depending on how you look at it, I guess. I mean, let's reemphasize that early on, and I'm talking the levels that most of us actually play D&D at, right? This is a pretty solid build. The damage is decent up through the first 5 levels, and after that you get some pretty nice support and utility features. What's more, our damage is ranged and almost never resisted. In fact, I mean, in an undead heavy campaign, it might be better than advertised. I mean, it's not like every undead or even most undead have radiant vulnerability. At the time of this recording, I think there are like 16 official 5e creatures with radiant vulnerability, not a ton, but they're out there. After that point, though, yeah, we really suffer, at least damage-wise, and this is largely due to the lack of scaling that we get on the monk in general, and the lack of scaling that the subclass gets in particular. Could we have gone a different route to bump our damage a little more? Sure. Going, say, Warlock to get Spirit Shroud would have done a little more for us than Hex, with the benefit of not requiring a bonus action to transfer every time our target dies, but Spirit Shroud does require you to be 10 feet away in order to benefit from the bonus damage, which feels kind of lame. If we could have gotten to like 9 levels of a full caster, I probably would have gone that route so that we could then enjoy the 2d8 per hit scaling that a 5th level spell version of Spirit Shroud would give us. But alas, I was bound to have more monk levels than anything else, so that by level 17, right, I couldn't have 9 levels in a full caster. Meaning that in the end, we were actually better off with Summon Fey than with Spirit Shroud. Plus, that let us be less mad, right? Getting Spirit Shroud would require us to have like a 13 in charisma or intelligence. And relying on Summon Fey let me live the double fairy fantasy. And let me bring a lot more support and utility to the party thanks to the power of druids. And yeah, I guess that's kind of the main takeaway for me here in the end. If you want to play a Sun Soul monk, you either need to drop monk like it's hot after level 5, maybe level 6, or think of yourself as primarily a support character who can also do some decent damage. With that paradigm, this build doesn't feel so bad, right? Lots of healing, lots of utility, great ways to buff your allies in and out of combat, and then, yeah, some decent backline sustainable DPR to boot. The kind of character that most parties would love to have along for the ride. If it were me trying to play a Sun Soul in-game, though, I'd definitely want to talk to my DM about ways to improve the subclass. We gotta get some homebrew going here. Now, maybe being a fairy hexblood is enough of a buff, if flying races are typically outlawed. But, you know, maybe you could get a magic item at some point that would let you improve your spell hit chance and damage, or increase your dexterity beyond 20. Or maybe those radiant sunbolts become ranged weapon attacks. Maybe your spell and AoE abilities can scale automatically with monk levels, not requiring an expenditure of extra key points. Maybe just proficiency bonus times per day or something. With that level 11 ability still doing half damage on a save, I think that's important. I'd love to hear your ideas on how to give some homebrew love to the Sun Soul, but I'd strongly encourage you to find some way to augment it with your DM, especially if you're playing into high level and you're playing at a table with lots of other optimizers. Finally, I promised an alternative build here that was focused on burst AoE damage, and this is how I would do it. First off, beeline to Monk 11. The level 11 Sun Soul feature, Searing Sunburst, can do fireball-like damage, but importantly and interestingly, it's not actually a spell. This means you could cast Burning Hands as a bonus action and still sunburst with your action. It would cost you a ton of ki if you wanted to max out both of them, but it's not bad like Area of Effect Nova damage. At that level, at level 11, it would potentially be 6d6 for Burning Hands and 8d6 for sunburst, 14d6 total. And if you could get 3 targets or more in the blast area, I mean, that's 42d6 of total damage across 3 targets. That feels pretty good. You could only do it once per short rest, but, you know, when you could do it, and when you had the enemies bunched up and things, it would be pretty cool. After that, I would take a 2-level fighter dip, I think, so that we could action surge that sunburst. I mean, you would spend all 11 of your key points in one round of burst damage there, but it would be a healthy heaping of AoE. I crunched the numbers for it, actually, at that point, and compared to other, like, AoE Nova builds at level 13, it was middle of the pack. While being almost a full monk with no caster levels, that in and of itself is pretty cool. The biggest problem with Sunburst is that, like I've said, it allows an enemy constitution save, the worst save for us to be targeting generally, and most damningly, I think, doesn't do half damage if the enemy makes their saving throw. That was one of the main reasons I decided in the end not to go this route for my Sun Soul monk build. The other main reason is that, yeah, as an AoE like burst damage character, it really doesn't come online until level 11. And most of us are ending our campaigns at that point, if not before. I hate doing builds where we're just kind of twiddling our thumbs for half our character's career, you know? I mean, we could still shoot the rays and, you know, even throw out burning hands and stuff by level 6, but yeah, it's pretty paltry multi-target damage. Definitely not bursty at all. So it just kind of felt like it didn't really have an identity as a build until you hit level 11. Anyways, from that point, level 13 in the build, I'd probably go cleric. Maybe light cleric feels best thematically so that we could get spirit guardians for more area of effect damage and even fireball eventually if we wanted. Though we couldn't burning hands bonus action and then fireball on the same turn thanks to the prohibition against casting a spell with our bonus action and any other spell that's not a cantrip with our action, right? But fireball is a dex save, not con, and still does half damage on a save. Anyways, I think the build has interesting potential. If I were going to play a campaign that started at level 11 or later, and maybe especially if I could convince my DM to let the sunburst do half damage on a save, I would love to try it out and have fun being an AoE burst damage monk, right? A really cool concept if nothing else. But that's the build for the week. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you don't consider it a complete and total failure. I know I don't. But yeah, it definitely highlights some reasons why people think of the Sun Soul as the worst subclass of the worst class in 5e. I still had a lot of fun making it. I hope you know that I love you. Thank you so much for all that you do for me, for the channel. You guys are fantastic. I hope you have a great day and a great week. And if you don't, please don't give up. I hope that you do good and be kind. And that I see you again very soon. But until then, take care. Bye. Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, laughing back and forth at what the other one had to say. Bum, bum. Reminiscing this and that and having such a good time. Oodle-lolly, oodle-lolly, golly, what a day. Never ever dreaming there was danger in the water they were drinking, they just guzzled it down. Never dreaming that a scheming sheriff and his posse was a-watching them and gathering around. Robin Hood and Little John running. Robin Hood and Little John running through the forest, jumping fences, dodging trees, and trying to get away. Boom, boom. Contemplating nothing but escaping, finally making it. Oodle-lolly, oodle-lolly, golly, what a day. Oodle-lolly, oodle-lolly, golly, what a day. I've had that song stuck in my head all day long. And you know why? I hope you know why. It's because my shirt. Yay, Dad! That is the best movie. My favorite Disney movie, I think. Is it? It's gotta be that or Emperor's New Groove. Excuse me. Dinging the notification bell. Well, yeah. If you can't play a race with innate light, flight. I really liked Aladdin. I don't know. Robin Williams is fantastic in that. Jasmine is totally my Disney princess crush. One of them. At least it only takes a bonus action and would... That was weird. Robin Hood and Little John running through the forest, laughing back and forth. Oh no, that's walking. I gotta start that over. Do outtakes have outtakes? Probably not. Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, laughing fat. Oh, this is the worst intentional outtakes reel ever. Let's try that again.